Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Ground ball towards short. Diaz is there. Astros win the series, taking this game 2-1.
Very nice.
Very nice. Does it work now? Does the microphone turn on? Huzzah! We are officially up and running, Vanessa and Gallant, on a Thursday. I am Paul Gallant. Vanessa, back in Indianapolis for more Indy 500 festivities. It is beginning to feel a little cult-like. Just saying, I mean, there's a lot of celebration for just one race. I feel like at some point, Sean Mapes behind the glass, we are going to have to find a way to get the entire show out there. Hopefully, that'll take place next year. Anyway, you heard the final call as the Astros took down the Cleveland Indians 2-1 last night in a game that should not have lasted 3 hours. Can we stop with 3-hour games featuring three runs? Is this what I'm going to spend the whole show talking about? Is Paul Gallant going to whine about baseball some more? No, I'm not going to do that. But they take 2 of 3 from Cleveland. They are now officially 2-1 in games where Vanessa does the pre and post. They have won 5 of their 6 series this month. And they will wrap things up on a second 9-game road trip of the year. Playing Seattle, who's now in last place, I think. Oakland, who has been in last place for the most part in the AL West this year, and Kansas City. All of them stink. Verlander starting Friday. Huzzah! Everything's great. Everything's neat. Everything is splendid. And last night, you got another really good night of pitching. Not enough offense. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to whine. 12 total strikeouts versus 4 hits, 3 walks. Paul, you're just reading off the box score. I know. But I want to talk about the pitching, in particular, what you got out of Christian Javier. 5 2/3 innings pitched, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk. He struck out 6 of the first 7 he faced. He was getting guys to miss. Cleveland, per, I believe, some advanced statistics, had the lowest whiff rate, which is a thing, in all of baseball. And here you were with, last night, Javier getting 20 swings and misses by the Cleveland Guardians. We're guards. Yeah, we're guards. He is the first Astros pitcher to strike out 9 and walk 1 or fewer in 2 straight starts since Gerrit Cole in September of 2019. That's per our guy, Robert Flores. Don't you love this about baseball, by the way, too? You can find any very, very obscure situation and say, this is the first time that's happened. How do they come to that? How do they think that up? Whoa, the first Astros pitcher to strike out 9 and walk 1 or fewer in 2 straight starts. Like, how do you look that up? Is it Google? Is there a baseball website where you can look up these weird scenarios? But he was great. And here's one of his strikeouts last night, which very, very much impressed Todd Callis and Jeff Bagwell on the call.
Gotta look fastball first pitch. You can't get behind.
Oh, my goodness. Strikes out the side. Javier has struck out 6 in 2 innings. What a start for this guy.
He looks so animated, too.
Whoa, can we just keep that music in the background playing for the rest of the game? That would make a 3-hour game featuring only 3 runs a lot more entertaining. It's been fun to have Jeff Bagwell on the call the last couple of nights, too. He was talking trash about the guy at first base. He wasn't doing a very good job as an umpire. I got a question for you. You can answer at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can also tweet me at Gallant Says, or you can get after us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I am a very aggressive crypto trader. I have put a gun in your face, and I am forcing you to buy the futures of one of the Astros' young pitchers. You must buy it. There's no walking on the fence. There's no escaping. You got to buy. You got to buy someone. You're not buying Justin Verlander. You're not allowed to. You're not buying Lance McCullers. Not allowed either. You have to buy stock in one of these four. Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy. Got to pick one of those four. Who are you picking? Because Javier's looked very good, and we're finally seeing Javier get some extended reps, obviously with Jake Odorizzi now banged up. Hopefully be able to walk again. We'll see. But you got to pick one of those four. I was thinking about it, and of course, you know, the way that I approach it, it's not just going to deal with whether or not the guy's actually good at pitching, what kind of stuff he has. It's also going to feature, hey, what does the guy look like? What's his number? Does he wear high socks? I got a couple of responses. Dune and Katie and the Reliant on Twitter, they responded saying, Jose Urquidy. And Urquidy is fun to say, which is one of their reasons. But I don't like the high socks. I also don't like number 65. So I'm out. 27 years old, I'm out. Yeah, I don't care. Guys, if you're, again, an aggressive crypto trader, one of those people that's trying to, you know, get me to join the pyramid scheme that is crypto, seemingly, hey, you should join in. It's the future. Who cares if it's tanking? It's the future. Join in. Urquidy, I'm not in on. But it's mainly because of the high socks and number 65. He's also 27 years old. Framber Valdez is so inconsistent. That's the thing that is tricky with him. Because you've seen Framber Valdez pitch well in the postseason. You've also seen him pitch horribly in the postseason. He's 28 years old, and we'll see what happens going forward if the Astros do eventually decide to sign him to a long-term extension. As far as things are right now, that hasn't gotten to that point. But 28 years old, I think you know that Framber Valdez is always going to be a maddeningly inconsistent pitcher. So that leaves the two 25-year-olds. You have Christian Javier, who between the fastball and the slider that he's been throwing of late has looked outstanding. And then you got Luis Garcia, who had two starts back-to-back that were pretty similar to Christian Javier not too long ago. He's also 25 years old. Hair is a vibe. I'm not going to lie. I'm leaning towards Luis Garcia entirely because of the hair. It's like a buzz cut fade mullet, right? And what's up with the return of the mullet these days? Has anyone else noticed how often you're seeing mullets, especially down here? I, since returning to Texas, have seen an amazing amount of mullets, and I'm not going to lie, I like it. Why do they go away? It's not a bad look. I mean, back in the early 2000s, we were rocking bleached blonde hair, frosted tips with puka shell necklaces. We thought that was cool. Why did we think mullets weren't? We got mullets. We got short shorts. We got high socks. It's like the 80s are back. So I'm feeling Luis Garcia, but it's mainly because of the hair, not because of any actually smart, intelligent reasons. What do you say? You got to invest in one of these guys. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Sean Mapes, you got to pick one of those four pitchers behind the glass. Who are you picking going forward? It's Christian Javier. He's the one. It's probably the stock is, it's not that high right now, but you know, it's starting to go up after the last two starts. Is it Jose Urquidy? Is it Luis Garcia? Is it Framber? What you got?
So at the start of this, I was thinking Framber because he's kind of shown us the most, and even though he's inconsistent, the highs are there. Then you mentioned that he's 28 years old.
He's old.
I had no idea he was 28 years old. That's
compared to the other four, he is old. Right.
He is way older than I thought. I was thinking maybe like 26.
I honestly thought, yeah, I thought 27 at the most. And, 28. Ooh.
Yeah, so with that being said, I got to go with Christian Javier, the man last night. A, he's been kind of held back, I feel like, in this reliever sometimes, starter sometimes. He's kind of the sixth starter who moves back and forth. I think if he had a steady role that he could prepare himself for and train for, I am a starter. I think you'd get more out of Christian Javier. And I also think that just with his last night's result is kind of a sign of that. And El Reptile is a cool nickname.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't dance on the mound like Luis Garcia.
Oh, well, hang on, though, because
I don't like it.
Oh, wow. Sean Mapes, get off my lawn, guy. Who would have thought?
No, just pitch the ball.
How the turns table. Look, I think from a rational, pragmatic standpoint, real talk right now, I'm with you on, with Javier, what you have, you're seeing what he's doing with the fastball and slider combination. I mean, what if he has another pitch? What if all of a sudden he starts throwing something else? Because if you're able to be this dominant, and it's not like he's throwing a million miles per hour or anything like that either, what's next? What more can you add to that? I think you can. It's a shame you don't have Brent Strom anymore. Maybe it's a little bit easier to add on to that. But if we're talking about like, hey, you know, I want a vibe. You know, I want a personality. I want someone who's dancing on the mound. I want someone who has a buzz cut mullet thing. I think it's Luis Garcia.
And 77 is kind of a cool number.
77 is sick. Yeah. I do wonder why some of these pitchers, when they finally get to the majors and they have the weird numbers, like why they don't get rid of it. 65 is a terrible number. I'm sorry, Urquidy. That is a terrible number. What are you doing? And spoken as someone who, you know, there nothing was more crushing to me when I was playing peewee football than getting assigned number 76 and 63 my first 2 years playing. I was pissed. I was like, this is ridiculous. Why am I wearing lineman numbers? Why am I practicing with the lineman? I'm the smallest kid on the team. No, you can't do the 60s and 70s, no offense, are lame. Outside of 69, for obvious reasons, nice. But all those other numbers, like anyone who's played football, you don't want one of those. You want a number in the 50s or the 90s if you're an lineman. Maybe the 80s if you're lucky. You don't want a number in the 70s or the 60s. Not good. That's where all the boomers are from anyway. Sean Mapes is behind the glass, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If you could pick between those four young Astros pitchers going forward, who are you picking? If we're both being serious, Sean and I are picking Christian Javier going forward, and it was a nice start by him last night. Also, why is Colin Kaepernick now getting a tryout? Is something going on? Let's put our tinfoil hats on. Why is Colin Kaepernick getting a tryout all of a sudden? 5 years after he last played. It's Vanessa and Gallant. Vanessa's up in Indianapolis. I am Paul Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
So yesterday we found out that former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick completed a workout with the Las Vegas Raiders. Why did I say Las Vegas? Las Vegas Raiders. He has not played since 2016, the year where he started kneeling during the national anthem to protest racial injustice and police brutality. As far as my overall take on Colin Kaepernick, there was one moment, an 18-minute press conference, where I felt that he made some compelling points about why he was taking a knee, why he decided to use this as a method of protest against the anthem, and you're allowed to feel however you want to feel about it. I thought for those 18 minutes, he made a lot of sense. I thought before, he was an idiot. Go back to that time where he posted on Instagram, storms coming with a 7. And it's a picture of flooded Houston as if like he was going to have a big year the next season. And also after the fact, some of the comments talking out of his ass about Fidel Castro and how education in Cuba statistically was great. The trollish move of wearing the cops' pigs socks that he wore to one practice. He started agitating after the fact, and I don't know how serious he was about returning to the NFL as a backup quarterback to prove that he still had it, if you will. I don't think there's any denying that from a talent perspective, Kaepernick's probably one of the best 100 quarterbacks in the United States of America. You have to make that argument, I think. Where in that 100? I don't know. But it's weird that all of a sudden he's getting a workout
with the Vegas Raiders. I'm really trying to figure it out. I mean, you feel pretty good about Derek Carr as your starting quarterback, right? If you're Vegas, with the way that they finished last year, with that playoff push that they had, Carr is by no means a great quarterback. I don't even know if he's very good. I do think he is good. And I do think that when you are a team that has had as much turbulence as the Raiders have had over the course of the last 20 years, you've found yourself in a spot where you thought you had stability. You bring in Josh McDaniels. Now you're bringing in Kaepernick. I don't get it. It feels like one of those moves where if Kaepernick is a backup, that is going to, for some players in a locker room, lead to some thoughts. So if Carr struggles ever, and let's be honest, Derek Carr does have some rough moments. Now all of a sudden, if this guy's on your roster, you're going to have people in that locker room that are questioning whether or not Carr should remain the guy. Kaepernick does have a ton of support, it seems. Now, there are some who have called him out of late. I think Antonio Brown recently made some interesting comments about him that I feel like were based in some truth. Like, hey, how much does he really want to get back in the game? Honestly, I used to think that it would probably be better for Colin Kaepernick and the message that he was trying to push if he didn't play ever again. So why would he actually want to play? He never went to Canada to play. He's never gone to any of the other developmental leagues to prove that he still had it. He acted like he was too big for it. I don't know. Football is one of these what-have-you-done-for-me-lately leagues. You do have to prove it. You can still do it. So it's weird. And I guess I'm trying to figure out why. Did the NFL like tell the Raiders to do this? I'm putting my tinfoil hat on right now. Hey, we've got this big mess with Deshaun Watson. Hey, we've got this big mess with John Gruden versus the NFL, where it looks like we're going to see some dirty laundry from behind the scenes thanks to those John Gruden emails that saw him fired. Is this some sort of, hey, look over here by the NFL? I don't know. I don't see the win in working out Colin Kaepernick, though. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Andy in Cypress wants to weigh in. Andy, what's up?
I love what you said. People need to realize Kaepernick walked away from the San Francisco 49ers. He wasn't let go. And then didn't this happen a couple years ago? Didn't he have a tryout and there were a bunch of scouts there?
I think
the day of his tryout, they showed up and he didn't.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments like this. So first off, there were rumored workouts that he was going to have, I think, with Baltimore, also with Seattle. And you're right. I think it took place in Atlanta, and Kaepernick was mad that the NFL was scheduling the workout for him. But they did schedule a workout for him. They put it in Atlanta, and at the last minute, yes, Kaepernick, I think, did pull out of it, which is kind of a giant F you to those people who were trying to get you back in. Now, maybe Kaepernick felt like he was a pawn or something like that. Whatever the case, it is hard to believe that he has really wanted to be back in the NFL over the past half decade, just based off of his actions.
Yeah, and I elaborate on that. I said the same thing about Vince Young and Tim Tebow. If those guys really wanted a chance to get back into the NFL, they would have hightailed it north to Canada like Doug Flutie did back in the day. And the right
Warren Moon did it too.
NFL.
Yeah, Andy, I'm 100% with you on that one.
Yeah, but plus, who wants this headache? Because as divided as the country is, half your fans are going to hate him being on the team. So why would any GM or head coach want this headache? And what you saying is this NFL going to Vegas and saying, hey, do this for us because we want the eyes here. We don't want the eyes over here. I mean, we see it every day in politics and the media. They do that every day.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I tell you, look, if he really wanted to play, and also, wait a second, didn't Kaepernick call the NFL a form of slavery?
Yes, he did on that like Netflix special that he had. Yes. Yeah. You're laying out a lot of the reasons, Andy, why it's very fair to be skeptical of Colin Kaepernick. And appreciate the phone call because other people do want to weigh in on this. 713-780-ESPN. It is hard to understand why. I am not saying, oh, you can't bring him back into the league. But the Raiders are not a team where this makes sense. Derek Carr is the guy that you want established as your starter. And Kaepernick's been on record saying, like, I want to prove I'm a starter again. Okay, well, this makes sense in Atlanta, where Marcus Mariota's the guy under center going into the year. It makes sense there, a lot of sense. I don't think it makes any sense for the Raiders unless Josh McDaniels has some sort of vision as to how he could use Kaepernick in some sort of, I don't know, like Taysom Hill role or something like that. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. We got Hector. Hector, what's up?
Hey, fellas, how you doing this
morning? Well.
Very good, very good. I'm a longtime Raider fan. Personally, having Kaepernick try out, that doesn't really bother me. Y'all were talking about putting the tinfoil hat on and just thinking about certain things. I do happen to know that there have been some rumblings going on in the Raiders' front office lately, and I wouldn't be surprised if this would be more of a PR move.
And Hector, what Hector's talking about right here is that there have been some allegations that Mark Davis has been sexually harassing people. I think the vice president was recently fired of the Las Vegas Raiders, and he threw some pretty damning accusations at Mark Davis. Yeah, that's Hector, the kind of stuff that you look at and you're like, okay, is this being done to distract, you know, much like the John Gruden emails distracted from the investigation into Daniel Snyder?
That's correct. And a lot of this started happening last year. There were a lot of firings that, well, not just firings, but people that were quitting.
Right.
If I remember correctly, in the summer of last year. So this isn't something that just started this year. But if I were in the PR, this is exactly what I would be doing. Not to take anything away from Colin Kaepernick, I'm sure he still has the potential to possibly be a quarterback, an NFL starting quarterback. But I really do think that this is more of a PR move than anything.
It feels like that, Hector, and appreciate the phone call. Yeah, it feels like some sort of misdirection because it doesn't make sense. Why would you have him behind Derek Carr? Anyone in that locker room, and especially any fans of the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders, probably going to be thinking to yourself, well, if Carr struggles, and Carr does have moments where he's not looking like an A-plus quarterback, where he'll look mediocre at best, where you're like, oh, well, would he be better? Like, it's just going to lend itself naturally to that kind of conversation. I feel like it's not good for Derek Carr. If you're talking about misdirection, though, and, you know, I saw something this offseason, too, about how the Vegas Raiders are one of like the few teams in the NFL that still keep paper records. Like, they haven't digitized their stuff yet. I mean, it's not a very well-run machine. We're talking about Lucky Sperm Club here with Mark Davis, you know? This is an Al Davis who was a legend. Al Davis is one of the most iconic figures in NFL history. And his backstory is incredible. Like, how he basically like wrested away ownership of the Las Vegas Raiders as like a coach at the same time. Fascinating character. His son is not him. Sons traditionally aren't their dad. Especially guys that have a lot of, you know, pelts on the wall, if you will. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Vanessa is in Indianapolis for the Indy 500. We're hoping she's having a lot of fun up there. The Astros are now 2-1 when she does pre and post. So how about that? You want to weigh in on Colin Kaepernick, 713-780-3776. I just do not see the win for the Vegas Raiders bringing him in any way, shape, or form. I'm not against the move necessarily. I am all for drama, especially, but I don't get it unless this is some sort of attempt at misdirection by the Raiders. Coming up next, why are playoff games in the NBA so bad? What is going on? Do you have a theory as to why? We'll talk about that next. You know what's not bad, though? My friends over at the Passive Investor Network. Boom! What a transition. I went out with the PIN process on Saturday. The PIN process is a 5-year personalized plan that Passive Investor Network will give you so that you can invest in real estate. And why wouldn't you invest in real estate? Money's going up, up, up. It's incredible. So the Passive Investor Network is a website, passiveinvestor.net, you can go to. You can check out when their next bus tour is. And on these bus tours, they're going to give you a tour around the city of Houston. And they're going to show you a bunch of different places that they are prospecting as potentially the next version of the Heights. They will find properties there for you. And with that personalized plan, they're going to help you and your family get real wealth through real estate. How do you get in touch with them? It's PassiveInvestor.net. Again, PassiveInvestor.net. You want to join them on the next bus tour? Tell them Paul Gallant sent you.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Just me today, 713-780-3776. If you can think of a valid reason to bring Colin Kaepernick onto your team that doesn't have to do with misdirection from front office issues, if you're the Vegas Raiders, please, please figure it out for me, because you're not making Derek Carr any more comfortable. We do have an update in the Tim Anderson, Josh Donaldson saga. So Josh Donald put out a statement to MLB.com today, which is 3 days after he was suspended for his inappropriate comments to Tim Anderson. And the statement reads as follows. First and foremost, I have the utmost respect for what Tim Anderson brings to the game of baseball. I stated over the weekend that I apologized for offending Tim and that it was a misunderstanding based on multiple exchanges between us over the years. My view of that exchange hasn't changed, and I absolutely meant no disrespect. In the past, it had never been an issue, and now that it is, we have a mutual understanding. Okay. Again, you could talk trash to somebody who claims that he is trying to be the next Jackie Robinson, but I suppose that Donaldson thought this was a much more friendly back and forth. I guess if you're Josh Donaldson, maybe you should look at anything you say and really wonder just how friendly it comes off, seeing as most people consider him to be a troll. Then it goes further, and this, I don't know. I would also like to apologize to Mrs. Rachel Robinson and the Jackie Robinson family for any distress this incident may have caused. Jackie was a true American hero, and I hold his name in the highest regard. Do you got to go that far? I mean, I suppose you could apologize to the Robinson family for, like Tim Anderson did, comparing Tim Anderson to Jackie Robinson, even sarcastically. But what? I feel like we went way overboard with the discussion about this, with the suspension over this. Was it something that Donaldson should have said? I don't know. Probably not. But just based off of who Donaldson is, I don't know. I feel like Tim Anderson's strong reaction to this is the only reason that this became a thing. And who am I to say how I should act if I were in Tim Anderson's shoes? But I don't see how you have a leg to stand on when somebody is using your own words against you. It's kind of funny to do that. People do it with me all the time, sports radio. Maybe I have a different kind of sense of it because I'm a little callous when it comes to things like this. I just don't feel like this should have turned into the big deal that it is. And now this is the most recent example of it being a big deal. All right, let's shift into the NBA. These conference finals have sucked. They've been absolutely dreadful. You know, for a moment last night, I thought, okay, first half between the Celtics and the Heat, we actually had ourselves a good game. And then my Celtics, they ran away with it in the third quarter and fourth quarter, and they win 93-80 in a game that really never felt that close in the second half. And it's been ugly for Miami the last couple of games with their starters. Their starters, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, Max Strus, they're 8 of 60 from the field in the last three games. It has been ugly. What's going on here? Why are these games so bad? And I've heard some think pieces about how maybe there's not enough rest time between games, which used to be a big peeve of mine, where you would see two, three games in days in between playoff games in the NBA playoffs. And it's weird because during the regular season, you see guys taking days off routinely, right? In the playoffs, though, that never happens. You would think that all of those days off during the regular season, at least based off of the conventional wisdom of all the analytical folks out there, would mean that none of these guys are getting tired in these games. Is that what's happening? Are these guys just so beat up over the course of these basketball games that that's why you're seeing like offensive production dwindle? Or is it just two really good defensive teams, Boston and Miami, going up against each other after Boston and Milwaukee went up against each other the round before? These games have sucked, though. And Golden State's just better than Dallas. That one makes sense to me. I think Dallas is not on Golden State's level as being a complete team yet. This is to me, a lot like Atlanta's run last year in the Eastern Conference, where they went fairly far. But, of course, eventually, you can't have it just be Trae Young to get you to a championship, much like you can't have it just be Luka Doncic get you to a championship. Maybe there's a better supporting cast around him in Dallas. All I'm saying is, that one makes sense to me. But this series makes no sense because every single game has been essentially a blowout victory for the team that's won. Sean Mapes behind the glass. You are a basketball guy. What do you think's going on in these playoffs? Because it has really been largely uncompetitive, in particular this round.
Yeah, I think with the Eastern, I think with the West, you're kind of right, where this isn't crazy that the Golden State Warriors are blowing out a team who has Luka Doncic and the Doncicettes.
And like Spencer Dinwiddie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
Two leading scorers for the Mavs, other than Luka. But for the East, I think it has partly to do with just how physical these games are. That both these teams play super physical. Boston, before this series, played a super physical game against Giannis and the Bucks, and then you mix it in with there's no time off between these games, it's going to lead to some blowouts. When in game one, there's no Horford and no Smart. Game two, I think someone on the Heat was out in game two. There's
Jimmy
so many,
Butler left, I think, in the middle of
game three.
Game three.
Yes, when Peyton Pritchard ripped his kneecap off.
Right, right, yeah. You had Marcus Smart missing game four.
Tyler Hero's missed the last two. I think Butler, he's out there, but obviously, I mean, he left the game in halftime with no, like, he will not return, and then he played the next game. It's pretty obvious he's hurt. Like,
right. Oh, yeah. He looks awful right now.
And Robert Williams is still recovering from meniscus. He played well last night. I think it's just so many injuries, and then you also with the, I mean, this is almost cliche, but I think, especially last night's right, with the three ball, the reliance on the three that Miami, I think they shot like 8 of 45 from three,
yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, I see how you lose by a lot.
Okay. So this isn't like a trend. This isn't something that you feel like maybe needs to be fixed. I will say the Eastern Conference does seem physical to the point where like, okay, we're talking, you got to win four games in a series and you've got these three teams that are beating the absolute bejesus out of each other. It does make you wonder like, okay, like, do any of these teams have a chance against Golden State coming out of it? Because Golden State does feel relatively fresh. I know Steph Curry's been banged up this year. The Draymond's been banged up this year.
Especially if they wrap it up tonight, they will have from tonight until June 1st. June 2nd is the first finals game.
Okay.
And so, and then obviously the Celtics, I mean, they could just win tomorrow and they have one game or one day less of rest. So it's not that crazy. But yeah, I definitely think that the exertion that the Warriors have had to put out is a little bit less than whoever wins the East.
We Boston fans are annoying. I would just like to say that we're not quite as annoying as Dallas fans, that's for sure. I'm just kidding. We're worse than Dallas fans. We're worse than Golden State fans, too. Who am I kidding?
I was having that conversation with one of my friends last night.
We suck. Yeah.
I was like, so in Warriors Celtics, who's the less annoying team? And we landed on the Warriors.
Yeah, dude. We got 18 titles, dude. We're gonna get 18. We got 17 already. You ever been to the Garden? You don't come out alive in the Garden. 713-780-3776. We've got Big Ro. Big Ro, what's going on, bro?
Hey, Corley. How about them seats, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Pretty nice. But I'm not going to be annoying about it, you see, because I don't want to drive off my listeners. You know, you can celebrate for me if you want, though.
Yeah, but I was trying to put on a Boston accent, but I can't do it. For long. I feel like this is way better. But yeah, I live here in Houston, but I am a Celtics fan. And I say Warriors fans are more annoying because when we suck, we still fill the garden up. And when they suck, they're nowhere to be found.
That's wrong. Warriors have had pretty loyal fans for a while. They never won, and they actually would show up. I would say Celtics fans, you could make the argument that like there was a stretch where they weren't actually showing up. And I want to know, Big Bro, are you from Boston originally? Like, what led to this Celtics fandom?
I don't know. When they won the championship, I was in high school. Now I'm from Houston.
Okay.
I like Ray Allen. Ray Allen's a beast. And I don't know, I just grew up I'm a Spurs fan and a Boston fan.
Oh, come on. All right, Big Bro, hang on. You got to go. No, Big Bro, we can't allow that. Sorry. No.
This guy's vine.
Listen, far be it from me to disavow someone as a Celtics fan, but you can't be a Spurs fan and a fan of any other team based off all the success that they've had of late. You can't. You know? Like, I want the Texans to do well. I want the Seahawks to do well because I covered both of those teams, but I'm only rooting for the Patriots. Same thing because they've won so much. You can't. Like, now that they're not good anymore, if I were to jump on another bandwagon, I would look like the worst. Baseball is different because I really, like, I'm not that passionate about baseball. You probably can tell that. That's why it was easy for me to jump from the Red Sox to the Astros. It really was. Basketball, though, you can't, you know, if you root for the Spurs, I'm sorry. And this seems, based off of what you were saying, Sean, what Josh Beard was saying last Friday, this seems consistent with just Spurs fans in general. They're low-key annoying.
Yes. So he wasn't satisfied with the Spurs making the finals in 2003, 2005, 2007. And then in 2008, he was like, you know what? I really like these Celtics. And then they made three straight finals.
Yeah.
And then the Spurs made two more finals to play. It's like, hey, sometimes the team you root for isn't going to make the finals. Dude.
No. That's no bueno. Vanessa Richardson's at the Indy 500. I'm Paul Gallant. It is Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next on this radio program of ours, we heard from Lovie Smith. And I got to tell him, he's got to tone down some of the rhetoric. I understand, you know, you support your guys, but this was a little bit too much. You will find out what that too much was next right here on Vanessa and Gallant, just me, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But first, guys, I got to tell you about the big fight on Saturday. Squab, 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 fight, 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 fight. Five-time world champion Gervonta Tank Davis defending his WBA lightweight title against number one ranked contender Rolando Romero. Two undefeated fighters in a matchup for the ages. It's live on pay-per-view through Showtime. Saturday at 8 Central. Showtime.com is where you order. Gervonta the Tank Davis. He is boxing's hottest young attraction, y'all. Meanwhile, Rolando Romero. He's unbeaten. The number one ranked contender. It's taking place in Brooklyn. And look, it's pretty cool. Davis is 26-0. 24 knockouts. Boxing needs more knockouts. Floyd Mayweather, boring. I don't like watching tag. I want to watch someone get their face stuffed in. I watched the Rocky movie franchise. You know what's great about that movie franchise? No one ever blocks. Bam, 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 right to the face. And you know what? With Davis, you might be getting a knockdown. He's regarded as one of the hardest punchers in all of boxing. A must-see attraction. He is promoted by Mayweather Promotions, but he doesn't play that way, which is great. But we'll see if Rolando Romero can live it up. It is, again, Saturday night, Showtime, showtime.com to order now. The fight's at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Broadcasting live for the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
No, Vanessa, she's up in Indianapolis, just me, Paul Gallant. You know, I've spoken with a lot of celebrities over the course of my radio career. You know, one time I did a show with Slim Thug. Another time I did a show where I called Harris County Judge Ed Emmett a boob, and he called into the show to defend himself. And right now, you know, so just par for the course with the Paul Gallant brand. Got another old friend calling in. It's Donnie Wahlberg. Donnie, what's going on, bro?
Hey, that's the hot spot. I've been a Boston fan since 86. Oh, since the 80s. You know, they took it step by step back there, and they were hanging tough. I have the Entourage movie downloaded on my phone. That's how much of a Boston fan I am.
Donnie, I really am wondering, what happened to your Boston accent? Did it get Hollywooded out? What's going on?
Well, I moved to Texas, so it's kind of a yawn and a hot spot. I got Patriot tattooed on my back.
That is a terrible Boston
accent.
I got
the Entourage movie.
Donnie.
I got the Entourage movie. That's on my phone.
Okay.
The Great Larry Bird Jersey 3.
So, Donnie, I mean, what's it like to be, you know, the failure compared to Mark? I mean, I know there's the other Wahlberg that I don't even know the name of, like your little brother. But, like, you know, Marky Mark went big, and you're just a guy.
You know, Marky Mark, you know, he messed up. Maybe he did the Funky Bunch. Come on now. He always got that over his head. Great show. I love you guys.
All right, thanks, Donnie. I'm just glad that Donnie Wahlberg is a listener of the Vanessa Gillott radio program. It's nice to, you know, get those celebrities that call in from time to time. I like also how his accent just turned into Texas towards the end of that. We appreciate the effort, though. You know, classic Donnie Wahlberg, American singer and songwriter, as Dick Willie says on the Twitch. Okay, guys, look. You know what my take is on Davis Mills. I'm not going to rule out the possibility that he could be a good quarterback in the NFL, but my general stance is with a young quarterback, he is probably not the answer. It's year two. We really have no idea what he's going to be this coming season. There's lots of reasons for optimism just based off of the way that Pep Hamilton took over the offense towards the end of the year. It felt like Mills was making steps forward as the season progressed. Anyway, Lovie Smith at OTAs talked about Davis Mills the other day, and I think he's got to temper things a bit. Here's Lovie.
I think he's going to be an excellent quarterback in NFL for a lot of years, but it's about this year. You know, having a year, he and Pep Hamilton get on the same page with our offense, and him being in a role from the start, that's different also. But that's what you do. You have a chance for him to establish himself as one of our primary leaders each day.
I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that from my head coach. He's going to be an excellent quarterback for years to come. That's a lot. And it's based off of what? Look, there were some signs that he could survive in this league, but that is completely far removed from being an excellent quarterback. I am of the belief that when it comes to this quarterback situation right now, it is far from anything final. I, in fact, thought that they should bring in competition this offseason just to see how he handles it. He's the starting quarterback going into the year, but let's have somebody else behind him. I don't like hearing this from Lovie. I don't. I get it. You're defending your guy, but an excellent quarterback for years to come. He's in his second year in the NFL. I don't know if I'm a young quarterback. I want to hear that. Because I feel like all of a sudden I'd start feeling myself a little bit. Maybe Mills is not wired that way, but that's an extreme thing to say. Excellent for years to come. This makes more sense. A little bit later, Lovie Smith says that Davis Mills needs reps to improve. You think?
Quarterback is the toughest position in football, and you have to put time in. No, there's no substitute for experience, though. I mean, every year, some things Davis will get just based on playing the game for a long period of time. But I think a lot of the good ones there, they play good ball early on, too. And did I tell you he was a smart guy that went to Stanford? Uh-huh. He picks things up fairly quick, and he'll be okay.
All of those things are fine. Dandy, swell, wonderful, cute, neato. But I just don't want to hear that the guy's excellent. You are, as the head coach of the Houston Texans, essentially the ambassador right now that is trying to regain trust. We have heard you in the past say, hey, look, we know that we have a lot of work to do to win back the trust of people here. You're saying the guy's excellent right now. Can't do that. You can't do that. Like I think if you're a Texans fan right now, you should be skeptical of everything that they say. And they shouldn't be telling you things like this. Excellent for years to come. Again, slip of the mouth. It's just a word. It's not the big deal. You know, I'm not trying to say like, oh man, I can't believe Lovie said this. I'm just saying, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that word. You're just putting a lot on the shoulders of Davis Mills. You're putting a lot of expectations on him too. And I don't think you should be selling Davis Mills as if he is the guy right now. Have we really seen that much out of him to make you be that confident in the guy?
It's all gut feeling right now. It can't be anything more than gut feeling. You either are in or you're out, and I feel like you should probably be out. Doesn't mean out entirely. Excellent. It's way too big of a word, way too strong of a word to talk about a guy who, yes, wasn't terrible last year. You could argue he was the second best rookie of all rookie quarterbacks in the NFL last year, behind Mac Jones. You could make that argument. And with the way that he finished the year and with the way Mac Jones finished the year, okay, you could really play some gymnastics here and have yourself strongly believing in Davis Mills going into the year. Excellent for years to come. That is not anywhere close to being decided. So I just don't want to hear that. I want honesty. I want transparency. I want to hear BS cliches when it comes to any question that's about Davis Mills right now. He's got to earn it. He's got to prove it. We'll see if he's able to do it with Pep Hamilton this season. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We had a question to open up today's show, and it had to do with last night's Astros victory because Christian Javier, he came in and he looked really, really good. So you got to pick between one of the four young Astros pitchers in the starting rotation. McCullers is out. Odorizzi's out. Justin Verlander's out. Between Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez, and Jose Urquidy, who are you buying stock in going forward? You answer that for me, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN
97.5, 92.5. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Warrior sound! Real. Let's go! Fun. Sports.